Hey, it's Steve Imke. In the fall of 2016, I had an opportunity to spend two nights with a class full of hobbyists that wanted to learn how to take a hobby that they love and turn it into a viable business. During those two nights, I took them on a journey of business entrepreneurship. I'm sorry you didn't make it, and I hope this is the next best thing. Here are excerpts from that live event. Hope you enjoy it. But even more important, I hope it inspires you to get off the couch and do something with it. Thanks for listening. How do I calculate what my hourly rate is? So this is one of the things that kind of came out of our discussion. So we know there's 365 days a year. If we take away the weekends, that's 104 weekend days, that leaves us with 262 work days a year. If we also then subtract from that vacation and personal days that we might have, 20 personal and vacation days and 9 holidays, that leaves us with approximately 232 business days that exist. By the way, this comes from a business blog that I have in there, so you can type in hourly rate calculations and all this stuff kind of comes there. So I see you guys taking notes, but you can also can download that. So if we assume that we can never assume that 8 hours is available for billing to our customer, right? And at the very best, I would say that we have 5 hours of billable time and 3 hours worth of fixed costs, or, you know, types of things, overhead, answering emails, doing sales calls, doing that other kind of stuff that goes in there. But let's just assume it was 5 hours a day. So if I take that 232 business days and multiply that by 5 hours, that leaves me 1,160 billable hours that I could possibly have. Now, I also have to factor in that I have fixed expenses and variable expenses, which equals my total expenses that I have. So, say my goal was that I was going to make $100,000 in earnings from this particular business, I would then add my total expenses to that. Let's say it was $20,000. So I need to capture $120,000. I now take my 120 divided by this 1,160 billable hours. It brings me to a rate of $103. I have to charge that. All right, that's kind of how we're going to get back to that. So whatever you want, you can put whatever numbers you want. You know, if it's 50,000 or 200,000, you put that in there, it kind of boils it down. If you say, listen, I'm not going to take that many vacation days, you know what I'm saying, or I'm going to work more or less or whatever, and I'm just trying to be realistic here. You got to work on the business as well as in the business. This is mostly for the freelancer kind of a thing, the person who's hanging out a shingle, is doing the work, and also finding the next customer. Okay, so I thought you might find that interesting. Another one I wanted to share, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Jonathan Lebed? Very interesting guy. He's 14 years old. He was 14 years old. He watched MSN news, and he would watch all these people hawk a stock. And he would see that every time they talked about the stock price went up. So what he did is he went, he had his mom open up an AOL account. He went in there and he took his birthday money and he bought a few shares of stock. Then he used an automated posting situation. He took the words from MSN and he applied it to the stock that he bought, some penny stock. And he was talking about, it's at a breakout point, it's this and that. And he automated this thing and he sent it, before he went to school in the morning, remember he's 14 years old, before he went to school he sent out 200 automated posts out to Yahoo Finance. The end of the day he would come back and he would sell his stock and he would take his money. In the course of 2 months this guy made $800,000. Of course, the SEC visited him. They took his pound of flesh. But you know what they've determined was he did nothing wrong. Because all the stock guys were doing the exact same thing. The only thing that was wrong was he was 14 years old and he shouldn't have had a stock account in the first place. So quite frankly, the point is that the internet makes everybody equal. So as we sit there and you talk about, they don't know whether you're a small one-man shop or a 150,000 man shop. There's really no way to tell, I mean, real obvious, you can create the persona that you want. And in some cases, this guy just kind of made it up as he went along. So my point is that the internet has allowed you to have a much bigger footprint out there. It has allowed you to funnel into the long tail and get a very specific following. And ideally what we really want when we talk about all this kind of stuff is we want our customers to make sales for us, right? We want to sell to one person and we want them to tell all their friends so that they come and they, rather than go business to consumer, we want to go consumer to consumer. That's what we call viral marketing out there, okay? One of the other things I wanted to share was, this is a Robert Kiyosaki model. Talks about the cash flow quadrant, and I think it's very important for this particular audience. This is kind of, if you're an employee, you have a job. You work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. If you're self-employed, aka a freelancer, you own your job, you work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. So you can see how these kind of align. When you go to this side, you have of your business owner, you own a system. You don't come to work, doesn't matter. Your employees come to work, they make money for you. Or it doesn't necessarily have to be employees, because I could write a book and essentially I'm making money selling books while I'm sitting here because they're selling on Amazon. So I've created a product that I don't have to have an employee, but I own a business. I own a system. The system is out there. It's creating revenue for me. I could be unemployed and still make making money. And then you become an investor. So you kind of almost follow this path. You start as an employee, become self-employed. You start hiring more people. You build a system. You become a business owner. And then eventually you sell your business and you get diversification because you now invest in a lot of other kinds of things. It's kind of the path I followed as I kind of went through that. And so there's actually a video I have on there that talks about the magic wealth formula, and it really talks about how, quite frankly, but again, I don't want to call myself a government conspiracy theorist, but quite frankly, the government wants you to be here. They want you to be employed, they want you to do that, because that's where they make their money. Out here, I start getting deductions. Over here, I'm paying 15% capital gains tax. I'm not paying hardly any of my share by the time it comes down to there. And then I got all these offsetting expenses that I really try not to pay any taxes if I can. I tell people, be an inch wide and a mile deep. So rather than be a lot of things to a lot of people, be that one person. So when we were talking about the quilting thing, maybe your specialty is wedding quilts. I don't know, I'm just giving you as an example. But the idea is, that's your niche. You go find other people that are related to the wedding industry, and this is what you do. This is the only thing that you do, but as far as they're concerned, and that's what you focus your energy in. That is where you become at the end of the tail, and you own the entire end of that tail, because you're the only one who focuses on it. Or maybe there's one or two of you, but that's it. You know what I'm saying? You're not at the head where you have to compete with a lot of other people. Does that make sense to you? Okay. So, inch wide and a mile deep. And I did throw this on the back here. I wanted to make sure the people were aware of this. Anybody know about co-packers? You know what a co-packer is? Basically, I went to a brewery, a West End Brewery in Ithaca, New York. It's the second oldest brewery next to Yingling in the United States. I went there, and I'm sitting there, they're pumping out Brooklyn Lager, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, this isn't their beer. Saranac is their beer brand that they have. And they said, oh, well, we're a co-packer. I said, what's a co-packer? So if you've got a recipe and you want to go get it out, kind of like what that outsourcing model is, you find a co-packer, you give them the recipe, they bottle it, they do it, they do the distributions, they do everything for you. You just give them the recipe for that. If you're manufacturing, same thing happens in there. They do the co-packers, they'll literally go ahead and manufacture the product. Now, it costs you a little bit more because you don't get to keep a lot of the margins, but like I use CreateSpace to do my books. I don't manufacture any of that. They do one-off solutions for each and every one of those. So when you have something like that, you give them the exact formula that you want. I want this, and I want to glue to that. I want this to happen, to do all this kind of stuff, and they'll go ahead and produce all that. All you do is you do the marketing, and you say, here's where the sales are going to go, and then they go ahead and they reconfigure their workspace. They go ahead and manufacture what you need to do, and then they send them out to wherever you say they're going to go send them out. So rather than you be the manufacturer, you get to use that, all right? The last thing, what I call the viable customer model. So bear with me, I'm gonna thread a quick story right here. Y'all came here with a car today, correct? Or a motorcycle or some vehicle, right? So the question that it boils down to is, you're all potential car buyers, assuming I'm a car salesman. So you're all potential car buyers. But how many of you are in the market today to buy a car? Nobody. So you're not viable. So now, how often do you replace your vehicle? If you're like me, well, I don't replace my vehicles very often. The newest vehicle I have is in the parking lot, and it's 11 years old. So let's just say it's every 10 years, okay, because I don't want to poll everybody. But so for me, it's, let's say, 10 years. 10 years between them. If my car breaks down and I got to go replace it, it might be a week before I replace it. So let's just do the math real quickly. 50 weeks in a year, because we'll just zero it in real quick, times 10 years, 500 weeks. 1 week I make a decision, 1 week I'm viable, 499 weeks I am not viable. Advertising, that's what you fall on. Most of it's deaf ears. Nobody cares. If I'm selling cars for 499 weeks, I don't care. 1 week I'm going to listen to your message. but the rest of the week, I don't really care. So you can follow the traditional advertising model and go after and just shotgun, spray and pray, they call it. And I go out there and put out all this stuff and hope that some of that's going to bounce back. I don't believe in that. I think that's just a very difficult, none of us have that kind of money to do that. That's part of brand awareness and everything else like that. What I believe is in the viable customer model. So the question is, let's say your car broke down on the way home. Let's say you got in a car accident. Who would you call?
My best friend.
Well, you might call the best friend, but let's just take a look at some traditional things. You call your insurance person.
Yeah.
You call the police department to go, you know, because you had an accident. You call the tow truck driver to pull it out. Maybe the body shop where you have to take it to, and so on and so forth. That goes in there, right? So here are four people that know that you are in that 1 week window. None of them sell cars. So if I can make a value proposition with the tow truck driver who's going to be motivated by dollars, and I simply said, here's a business card that I went to Vistaprint for, and I went ahead and I put this special QR code just for you, Mr. Tow Truck Driver, and when this card comes back to me as a referral, you will in fact get $100 from me. I'm going to tell you what, every car that tow truck driver does, he's going to press one of my cards into that guy's hand. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he? For $100. Now, if I told that to the insurance guy, he's going to say, $100, that's really not really worth it to me. But I tell him, listen, here's a different start of the story. I just had wrecked my car. I got people that probably didn't have a really good experience. For everyone that you refer to me, I keep you on my webpage as a sponsor so that when they go buy a car from me, they see you as the sponsor, as the insurance guy, and they say, you know what, I'm not real happy with my insurance company because they didn't pay me enough money for the wreck. I'm going to go switch insurance companies, and oh, by the way, it's on your website, I just got a brand thing. So that might be his piece. So all those people that I might touch, and I could go to police officers and everybody else, they all would have something that might motivate them.
Yeah.
If you can motivate them to do the referrals for you, you see what I'm getting toward? They become the marketing extension. That's what I call the viable customer model. So the quilting thing, if you do the wedding thing or whatever, I'll just use that, I keep beating on that one. But take a look at everything that has to do with weddings, caterers, whatever. Build a value proposition for every one of them to do a referral to you. If you're selling craft things, every one of those people that might touch that, everything from consignment stores or whatever, you see what I'm saying? Getting all of that kind of stuff, the consulting things, doesn't matter. Wherever those things are, find out who those other people are that know that your target is in that viable window. Make a value proposition for them to do some kind of referral to you. So I'll leave you with that thought. Thank you for listening to How to Turn My Hobby into a Full-Fledged Business. To learn more about Steve Emke, or to learn more about what it takes to own and operate a small business, please visit stevebizblog.com. That's stevebizblog.com. Or look for Steve's many books on various aspects of small business ownership at amazon.com or at stevebizblog.com.